parent's nightmare, the babysitter's secret. The saga that I've endured throughout the past 20 years is a good example of all that is wrong with our legal system and the people who are charged with carrying it out. It follows that on Saturday evening, September 24th, 1994, as was customary, I returned home from work from my 2 to 10 shift from Grinnell Corporation in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I relieved the babysitter and assumed all was well. I'd had a long day at work and dozed off on the sofa with my stepson, Kyle. At about 1 a.m., my girlfriend, Pamela, returned home from an outing with her mother, Bonnie, and some friends. I woke up and decided to check on my other stepson, 8-month-old baby Jordan. I thought it odd that the baby was in the upstairs room because he was usually in the downstairs playpen. Maybe the babysitter took him upstairs before she left, I thought. I ascended the 13 steps leading to the second floor of the apartment. I was stunned to find baby Jordan unconscious and blue. In a frantic response, I thought baby Jordan downstairs and yelled for Pam, Jordan's mother, to call 911. Untrained as I was, I still attempted to administer CPR on Jordan. Pamela was standing next to him with the phone. She waited several minutes and rushed outside to see if she could spot any sign of an ambulance. She came to my aid so that I could speak with the operator about baby Jordan's condition. The first to arrive at the apartment were two police officers from Manheim Township Police Department. Officer John Wetlaufer took over the administration of CPR by first removing baby Jordan from the seat of the chair where I, in my untrained condition, placed him on the floor to continue to administer CPR. Unfortunately, baby Jordan remained unresponsive to all attempts to revive him. Baby Jordan was transported via ambulance to Lancaster General Hospital, where unfortunately all further attempts to revive him were unsuccessful, and he was pronounced dead at 3:40 a.m. It appeared to be a case of SIDS, and the cause of death recorded was cardiac arrest. Pamela and I were questioned closely by detectives. This was the result of the physicians at Lancaster General Hospital having notified the coroner and stating that baby Jordan's death was suspicious due to certain bruise marks on the baby's lower chest and abdominal wall. Baby Jordan had a mark on his face, which was the result of his bumping his head against a hot iron that was thoughtlessly placed by the floor of a friend's house during a visit. But other than that, all reports about baby Jordan's care were positive. The police would later write in their report that the home was well kept and neat. The refrigerator and cupboards were well stocked with food. After agreeing to go to the police station, Pamela and I were separated and intensely interviewed by detectives. Particularly, I was subjected to hours of interrogation. I had little to eat. I was devastated about baby Jordan's unforeseen death. I was emotionally drained. After hours of intense questioning, the lead detective in the case, Detective Raymond E. Salt, typed up a version of what he purported I stated happened. In his experience with legal matters and trusting that this was the police officer, I signed the document without first reading its content. The lead detective in the case, Detective Raymond E. Salt, typed up a version of what he purported that I stated happened. In my experience with legal matters and trusting that this was a police officer, I signed the document without first reading its content. I signed in the manner that Detective Salt indicated, not knowing that I had just signed a confession to first-degree murder. Detective Raymond E. Salt is well known for his role in the investigation of the Lisa M. Lambert case, the young teen who was accused of killing Laurie Show, a 16-year-old who lived in East Lampeter Township, Lancaster County. The case received national attention when a federal judge ordered Lisa M. Lambert released in April 1997 after finding her trial was infected with numerous instances of prosecutorial misconduct. Of Raymond E. Salt, the federal judge, Stuart J. Dizell, found his testimony, quote-unquote, fantastic. The judge further believed that he, Raymond E. Salt, made alterations to Lisa M. Lambert's alleged confession. There were some interesting similarities between the Lambert case and mine. Some of the same principles were involved in both prosecutions. Detective Salt took both their statements, which later went on to label as confessions. In both separate cases, he made them sign each page of the typewritten manuscript in bold cursive writing. The case had many irregularities from the start, and it followed through during the entire case, from the investigation part to the prosecution. For example, Dr. Barry Watt, the county coroner, who was summoned to Lancaster General Hospital to examine baby Jordan, it is worth noting that he did not speak with me or Pamela or any of our friends and family that arrived at the hospital to offer support to us as grieving parents. He noticed some small marks on baby Jordan's lower chest and abdomen. The Lancaster General Hospital report indicated that there were 11 in number and appeared brownish, purplish in color. Walt said to police investigators, the bruising were not from tonight, but from possibly a couple of days ago. In other words, they were in the stages of healing and could not have been caused by CPR being performed the night that baby Jordan died. In Detective Leeds' report, he was told by the medical examiner, Dr. Ross, that the 16 healing bruise marks on Jordan's chest and abdomen, the injuries could have occurred within 3 to 24 hours of death. Yet, conveniently for the prosecution's case, at my preliminary hearing, Dr. Ross testified that the bruises on the child's abdomen were fresh and he described their color as being reddish-brown. He went on to state that the child's death was due to blunt chest and abdominal trauma. Based on Dr. Ross's testimony, which went unchallenged by any expert for the defense because there weren't any, and I was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. As stated at the start of my case, represents all that is wrong with our legal system, particularly when it comes to a defendant with little to no financial means by which to hire powerful attorneys and experts to rebut the state's case. It is very important to note that at trial, Dr. Ross testified that baby Jordan died of blunt force trauma. However, the autopsy report did not reveal any indication of child abuse by way of fractures, healing, or fresh. There was no tearing or lacerations of the baby's skin. There was no obvious swelling or edema associated with a repetitive beating, as was the state's theory. This begs the question, why? Why would the coroner make such a determination of facts without speaking with the parents about the baby's condition prior to his death? Why would Dr. Ross first say that the bruises on baby Jordan were healing and then at the preliminary hearing say they were fresh? Why, if I beat the baby repeatedly with my fist while the baby hung from one arm, wasn't there any evidence at all of broken bones, swelling, or dislocation of the infant's shoulder? Which one would expect if the state's theory is to be believed? At some point, Dr. Ross testified that baby Jordan received a beating equal to being hit by a truck traveling at 30 miles per hour. How could it be possible that a 235-pound man supposedly grabbed an 8-month-old baby, held him by one arm, and beat him with a closed fist in a state of rage, then switched him to the other arm and continued to beat him, as was the state's theory, and all you can find is a few small bruises? This is humanly impossible and a clear work of fiction by the state with the help of Dr. Ross and aided by the incompetence of my counsel. The facts in this case do not support a conviction of first-degree murder or any murder, period. This case must be reversed and justice must prevail. Please check our longer version of this report for a full account of the events leading to baby Jordan's death and expert analysis by several pathologists who agree that I did not kill baby Jordan. Finally, and most importantly, 20 years later, even though we aren't together, I still have the full support of Pamela, Jordan's mother, and Bonnie, the grandmother of baby Jordan, championing my actual innocence. I remain suffering this horrible miscarriage of justice every waking day and night, wrongly convicted of a crime I know I didn't commit, especially as a parent making every effort and attempt to save my son's life. If this is not the most vicious form of cruel and unusual punishment, I don't know what is. I remain and wait for the support necessary to prove my actual innocence. The voice and face of the Nation of Prisoners, I'm Brian DeRoyal at SCI Mahanoy for PrisonRadio.org.